Look, our brains are great at lots of things, but remembering passwords is not one of them, especially not secure passwords. Let's free our brains from being password managers and get something way better. 1Password. 1Password keeps everything private and in sync across multiple devices. 1Password can't see the passwords or sensitive information you store in 1Password, so they can't use it, share it, or sell it, and neither can anyone else. I've been using 1Password for about 10 years now, and it's made my life so much easier, especially using it with Touch ID and Face ID. It's the first thing I install on any new phone, computer, or tablet I'm using for myself or my family. And all you have to remember is one strong account password that protects everything else. Your logins, your credit cards, secure notes, or the office Wi-Fi password. And I love that something I use to save me so many hours I can't even count them all is something you can try too. Right now, my listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/beyond for your growing business. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/beyond. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/beyond. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm going to be behind your productivity, especially if you're a podcaster, because this is a guest appearance that I did on my friend Jeff C's Social Media News Live weekly show. Jeff and I have known each other for years. I used to be his boss, but we don't let that get in the way anymore. And recently, I was on his show, and we talked all about productivity in podcasting. He asked me so many great questions. I thought, you know what? This really needs to go out there, not just for people who are interested in productivity like you, but people that are interested in podcasting like me. And I guess I'm in the center of that Venn diagram when it comes to productivity and podcasting. So I couldn't pass up the opportunity. It turned out so well. Some of the things that we cover in this conversation, especially if you're interested in podcasting or have gotten your feet wet in the podcasting industry, but haven't really made a lot of progress just yet. We talk about podcasting workflow. We talk about recruiting guests. How much time a week are you spending on your podcast? Setting up scheduling, having certain hours set aside to do podcasting work, any kind of documentation that you might send a guest, finding and hiring an editor, what to do if you're struggling to get guests. We talk about advertising a bit, promotion, and ultimately we talk about a lot of the experiences and insights that I've had over the course of doing this show, Beyond the To-Do List, for the past 10 years. This show turned 10 years old in August of 2022. And so you'll get a lot of insights in terms of what I could tell myself or somebody else if they were just getting started now. So if you're a podcaster, you're going to love this. If you're thinking about getting into doing a podcast, you're also going to love this. And if you know a podcaster, share this with them now as you jump into this conversation that I had with Jeff C. Hello, folks. Welcome to Social Media News Live. I'm Jeff C.
And you're not. And this is the show that keeps you up to date on what's happening in the world of social media. Today, I'm joined by my friend Eric Fisher, and today's show is all about being more productive in podcasting. Eric, I'm so excited you're here today. Thanks for joining us again. Third time,
thank
I
you.
Think. Third or fourth. You're here all the time.
I don't know. It's been many times. I was trying to tell somebody the other day, Jeff's been doing the show forever, and I'm like, I don't know how long it's been, because it feels like forever.
It has felt like forever, but in a good way, in a good way.
I'm glad to be here, because we're talking about two of my favorite things, podcasting and productivity.
That's right. It's your sweet spot. It's that Venn diagram of Eric
yes.
Fisher. But if you do not know who Eric Fisher is, you should. He is the producer and host of the long-running Beyond the To-Do List podcast. For almost 10 years, he's talked with experts on how to implement productivity strategies in their personal and professional lives. And he is currently an account manager at Now Marketing Group, our friend Jessica over there. So I'm glad that you're there helping them out. But we wanted to dive in really quickly to podcasting productivity. I mean, I feel like We've talked about this on the show quite a bit. We kind of had that podcasting bit last month and getting in ready for a leap into podcasting for Ecamm. And by the way, before I go any further, I want to do a big shout out to our show sponsor, Ecamm. You can find out more about them at socialmedianewslive.com/Ecamm. It's really great for video podcasting. It also is really great for just regular podcasting. If you for some reason didn't want the video, I don't know why. But it's really easy because it actually breaks down the tracks. So when I'm done with this show, Eric will have his own track. I'll have my own track. If Grace was on here, she'd have her own track. Even the sound effects, and if I play any movies or any video on there, that is actually split out as well. So it's really, really cool. It's really, really handy. We mentioned Leap into Podcasting. If you're interested in that, you can go to merch.ecamm.com. If you get the guide there, there's a physical and digital version. Then you get access to all the replays, like not just this year, but like I think 2 or 3 years. So it's really worth it if you're looking at doing video podcasting or leap into live streaming, any of that kind of stuff. Merch.ecamm.com. Thanks for them for sponsoring the show. All right, Eric, I want to go over, just to start off, your podcasting workflow. Like, kind of walk us through your week, because it is a weekly show. What's kind of your schedule, how you handle it, what do you do? Walk us through that.
Yeah. So, well, I will say this. First, starting out early days, it was very much a high pressure situation where it was like, I have to get a show out every week. And honestly, it didn't always happen. Mm. It did for the first 16 episodes. Then I intentionally took a break, and I took about a holiday break of 8 weeks or so. And in that 8 weeks, I was like, okay, I've had my first taste of doing something consistently solo, mm-hmm. where I'm the only person working on it. What are the lessons that I need to learn? And one of them that I came up with was, you cannot record every single week because you don't know if that's even feasible, but you can create pockets and windows and seasons, not in the way that we know of podcast seasons now, but like literal, like, oh, batch processing is what I'm speaking to. And so it was like, okay, well, if I could back to back record two, which I don't know that I suggest doing that because you like me and many others, it's like you're done with one, you're just done for the day or done for a while. You got to recharge, right? Yeah. So that's part of that, knowing yourself. But having a week or a two or three and knowing what your slots are. And as I moved it fully into remote work and had a stable place that was always set up with this mic and this recorder and all those things and certain blocks of time on my calendar, I was able to then make certain windows open. But in the early days, it was kind of a free for all. And that's not where I suggest anybody start off as. And a lot of people getting into podcasting, they're either doing it for their day job mm-hmm. as part of that, or they're doing it for their own thing. And you've got to first know, I've got a time block. I've got to get the time block situation done first.
All right. So I kind of jumped into it because I assume everybody knows who you are, but let's talk about Beyond the To-Do List podcast, because it's been out for over 10 years. It's mostly an interview style show, would you say? There's a couple solo episodes that you've done. I know you're going to do some more in the future, but talk about that and why you decided to do an interview show and maybe some of the pros and cons of doing an interview show, because that seems to be the most typical type of podcasting, kind of, you know, especially in our industry and the ones that we listen to, they always seem to be interview style shows. Talk about the pros and cons of that style of show.
Well, a pro is you get to bring in a perspective that's not your own. It's much more interesting. And I typically gravitate towards shows where it's more than one person talking. Now, there are a few, and I will mention them in a minute, also in the pros side of things mm-hmm. that are solo shows, but they are shorter and they are, it's almost like it's a blog article or a newsletter that's being read dramatically with thought and feeling and inflection. And I really appreciate those. In fact, I'll just say it. Tom Webster.
Oh yeah.
He's one of them that I listened to. Actually, I listened to one of them this morning and it was very fun. I enjoy his voice. I enjoy him conveying the information. So there is a positive to doing it on your own. There's also a positive though to doing it with somebody, with a guest, because one, you're pulling information from that person and sharing it with your audience. You're learning in public, if you will. And that was one of the biggest things that I decided I needed and wanted to do was if somebody says, hey, I've got a podcast, will you come on? You have no idea some of the doors that can open because you do that. I've been able to speak to people I never thought I would speak to.
Right.
In public, no less, and have it recorded. So it's great. Doing it solo, though, there are some cons. It's now all on you.
Right.
Right. And you have to craft what you're going to say. No one wants to listen to somebody just riff by themselves unless you're really good at it and have practice at that. So even when I've done solo shows, I've had an outline and even fleshed it out and had, you know, I would read through the outline as I did like a walk and talk, mm-hmm. and then would go through and craft that a little bit better and then not read it, but actually just kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say perform it, but,
right.
you know, read it dramatically without the drama, in other words.
Gotcha.
A con, though, of doing it with other people is now you're at the mercy of their schedule.
And yes, so, yes. We're going to talk about that.
A lot of technical difficulties can happen when connecting with others and recording that way. That wouldn't necessarily happen if you're doing a solo show.
So on getting your guests, do you get most people coming to you to be on your show? Or are you actively recruiting guests? I mean, I'm assuming since you've been around for 10 years and a lot of people want to get on your show, it's not the issue that you had when you first started. It's probably kind of flip-flop. So talk about that a little bit, like getting guests. Like, how would you tell somebody who's just getting into podcasts to get guests? And like, how are you doing it now? Because I know you get a lot of books and stuff.
Yeah, when I started, it was all about intentionally seeking out guests. It was all on me. I had to do it. And in fact, anybody who's starting off and they're looking to do solo or with guests, I suggest sitting down and creating almost a mind map kind of a scenario, whether it's topical or it's guest or both, and kind of match those up and kind of plan out, you know what? Here's a good 20, 25 plus, or even 50. If you can get 52, you got a year. You got a year of content. And then in the process of making that, other ideas are going to come up. But start there. Start with creating a list of either people you want to talk to and why, or the topics you want to talk to, and either do a solo show that way or have a guest for that topic specifically. And that's what I did. That's how I started off. Those first 16, I sought those guests out. I either knew they were an expert in their field, or I knew that I could get them by saying, hey, one of the other people that I have just had on the show was on the show. Will you do it? You'd be amazed at how, like, hey, I've got Michael Hyatt on the show. Now I can get Dan Miller. Or that I've had the two of them, I can get so-and-so. And that's how it started. And yes, the industry has changed. And over time, there's been a lot more businesses and PR people. Mm-hmm. PR people have really cued into the fact that, oh, my client has a new book coming out. I need to look and see which shows are appropriate to have them on. And they do their research. For the most part, there are definitely some pitches that's like, this isn't a fit for my show, more than you would know. And I get a lot of emails, and there are people that scrape the emails that are connected with certain, you know, Apple Podcasts or other different podcasts, varying degrees of data that's available. You know how it is.
Right.
You've talked to social media people and people scraping LinkedIn email addresses to send stuff. So, but that's what it's kind of transitioned into. I still want to, and in fact, I'm doing this now. I'm in the process of increasing my intentional activity towards choosing and reaching out to people I really want to have on, and not just doing the passive role of, well, I'm getting so-and-so amount of email pitches a day, a week, a month, and then just picking enough of them. I only need four out of however many to make it worth all those coming in. But yeah, I would say always go for quality and always be intentional and shoot for people that you may not think you can get, and go ahead and ask anyway, because you might get a yes. I did.
Yeah, that is true. You never know unless you ask. And, you know, what's the worst they're going to say is no, you know.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody get mad being asked. So under the productivity angle, because, you know, everyone's like, oh, I can get a guest a week. Oh, not a big deal. But then you start thinking about, okay, I want to make an intelligent conversation. And you can tell the good podcasters from the not so good podcasters, and you obviously are a great podcaster, is that they do research. They're doing research on their guests. And, you know, I do work for Guy Kawasaki. I'm his producer and editor over on his show. And he really researches that. And a lot of the guests he has are, they have a book that comes out. I know this happens with you as well, because there's actually been crossover from you and Guy's show. It's the same time the book is coming out. And, oh, you had that guest. But how do you prepare? I mean, are you reading a book a week? Like, I mean, Guy usually kind of does that. I mean, what is your productivity, like, hacks to be prepared for your guests and ask the questions?
So there's two ways you can go with this. One, be a great reader. And I am a fast reader, so that really does help, and I enjoy it. And I love getting free books all the time in the mail. Sometimes they show up and I haven't even asked for it. I'm like, I don't know who this is. And that's fine. I kind of wait to see if an email follows. But One, build in reading time, whether it's in the morning or it's throughout the day or if it's in the evening to wind down. And don't be afraid to, one, oh, this book looks interesting. Let me skim it first and say, okay, I get the main points. Now let me go back and revisit the places I marked where I want to do a deeper dive and maybe formulate a question from. That's number one. Number two is, and this is hard if the book isn't out yet or the person hasn't done any interviews yet. What's great is sometimes I can get a podcast episode from a friend or some other show and listen to them on that show and get a gist of it and then go through the book or formulate questions off of, like, I'll hear one of my podcasting friends ask somebody about some specific topic. And, you know, these people know their talking points if they're good. And if you know their talking point of what they're going to kind of, I mean, I've heard somebody answer almost verbatim to the same question, but then I already have a follow-up question that the other person didn't ask. So it's kind of a cheat. You get to, you know, study them, listen to a podcast episode they've already been on. There's nothing bad about that. Take them to a place that that show didn't with your show.
That's a great thing. It's like a guy I know prides himself on, nothing makes him more happy than when they say, nobody's ever asked me that before. And I think that should be all of our goal as we interview stuff. Like, and you're not trying to catch them off guard or anything, but something like shows them that you really dove into their content. And also you were very thoughtful about your questions. And that's the other point at kind of productivity wise. Like, what is your document, or when you prepare for guests, what does it look like? Do you have, like, I'm going to get at least 10 questions. I'm going to have this bio. How does that work? What does that look like for you before you interview a guest?
I think I always end up having more questions than I need, and that's a good thing. I try to have them in an order that makes conversational sense, conversational flow. And yeah, I always try to have more questions than I need so I can fall back on, okay, the guest's great, and I know this already, hopefully, by having done my research and vetted them. But if they aren't a talker as much as I maybe need them to be, I would always say your guests should be talking 75-80% of the show and not you. So if I can get them to do that, if I can set them off, if I can have a bunch of, like, if I have, you know, we're going to talk about this, that's one section, and have like three, I try to aim for three different sections of the conversation. So I kind of know where I'm at, and I kind of try to outline it and have certain, you know, I've got 2, 3, 5 questions in section one, same for two, same for three. And then I know, oh, well, we skipped down to section two. And the only thing you can do with this is practice. It takes time. It takes practice. It takes, and that's why it was great to have been co-host on two other shows before doing this for myself. I got a lot of practice in public, so to speak, under my belt. But yeah, I like to have multiple questions in each kind of section. And then I'll know, okay, we're past the first, the second, and third of the show. And now we can wrap up. Wrap up is always the same. It's like, oh, well, it's been great talking with you. Let's, it's standard for everybody. Right, you just get over it. It's fine. Yeah. Tell us where they can find you.
Yeah.
I'll link up to that in the show notes.
Right.
And so I don't worry about that. That's kind of standard. I can copy that in. Actually, I can do that without thinking about it. We all can.
Right.
So
here's a question I know that I've been asked before in some of the podcasting things that I've been involved with is, should you have a set of questions that you ask every time? Like, and I know, and this comes from, I think, somebody who is on fire that does that, and it works for him. Mm-hmm. My thought is, and tell me if I'm wrong, I want to have new questions for each show. Other people say I'm going to ask the same questions every time, and I think it's based on what John has done, but what are your thoughts on that? And what would you tell somebody who's just started?
I would say that if you want to have a set question or questions that you ask every single guest, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I started off with that. Mm-hmm. And for the first 16 episodes I did, and I think even for the next 20, 30, 40, 50, I somewhere in there, it got lost. I kind of phased it out because it didn't really make sense anymore. And I still remember it. It's in an ideal world, how do you start your day? And that made sense at the time. But as I got further in, at me asking that question of somebody who that's not the topic they're there to talk about at all, doesn't really make sense. Now, here's the thing. If you're doing like a Patreon or something else and you want bonus content, having a round of 4, 5 to 10 questions that are kind of rapid fire that you don't include in the regular episode, but that's what you have as bonus content, that's an option. But again, I think it depends on your show, depends on your guest, depends on your topic, depends on your show's flow, if that makes sense to have set questions that you ask every single one of them. Nothing wrong with that, but it's got to make sense and it's got to be right for you.
I think that's a great point. I don't mind having a couple of set questions that you ask each guest. I mean, I've been on guests on shows where they've done that. My thing is like what John Lee Dumas does, where it's the same questions every time for every show, you know, forever.
Well, there's a pro to that, that you know what you're going to get. Like, for example, I'm not currently watching any real like news type shows or even comedy news shows. But for a while there, I was watching Colbert, and he would have a segment where he'd have a guest that was there weeks ago sit and answer the same 10 questions. And it was to better know that guest. And so I knew those questions and I knew what I was going to get in terms of the catalyst for the conversation, but I didn't know what the answer was going to be. Like, and these were simple questions like apple or orange, or, you know, describe your life in 5 words, or things like that, that are simple. And it's cool. And it's kind of, you're curious, how is Hugh Jackman going to answer this differently than say Sting or, you know, insert celebrity here.
Yeah. I guess my point was, and I think that's right, because I've been on those rapid fire questions and those are fun. Those are a nice little thing. I've been on shows before. I guess just copying the format of other shows is what I think I was trying to talk about, because like, I swear every time there's a podcasting conference afterwards, there's so many like accountants on fire and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And my thing is we shouldn't copy.
And that's funny. We both know somebody who I met at the most recent podcast conference we both went to, and he came up to me and we were talking, and he said, you know, at some point I looked up, when did you name your show? Because his show is Beyond the, and then insert a few words. And then I went and looked, I went into a podcast search engine and I just typed in Beyond the, and I saw all these different ones. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I know I was the first with 90%+ confidence.
Right.
There wasn't any. I mean, you'd type in Beyond the, and it was just me that would pop up, but it's been 10 years and it's kind of filtered through.
Right.
That's nowhere near anybody, you know, being on fire, but still.
Right. The other question, really quickly, I want you to talk about, how many hours does it take for your podcast workflow? Like a week, how much do you spend on your podcast?
Well, time-wise, it's going to vary, because again, what I did learn was there are certain chunks of time. Like I think about, you and I both talk about the 12-week year where we look at a quarter of the year and we kind of say, okay, how many do I need? So I need 12 episodes and that's 12 recordings, unless I'm releasing a repeat episode, which occasionally I've done, less so now, more they're more bonus episodes than anything. But it's okay to get 12, I need to open up enough time for 12 people. And I need to maybe front load that and ideally have those recorded before the new 12 weeks even start or half of them, and stay ahead. In other words, create margin, create workflow, create structure. And so on a week, the max I would ever record in a week would be 3. But again, that's maybe more than some people are comfortable with. But for me, that's 3 other weeks that I don't have to record any.
Right.
So. And as it goes, as it filters through, as I get responses and I see the bookings come through my Calendly, I will say, okay, that's another one. Where is that? And I look on the calendar and say, okay, well, there's already 1 or 2 that week. Close off the rest of the space in that time and maybe add it in other places. I make more than 12 slots available, but I close them down as the weeks get full.
Right.
And I also block off weeks where I'm like, that week's impossible to record at all. And so you have to go into it with that context before I give a correct answer and say, I can say that it takes me 5 hours in a given week, because sometimes the research doesn't take as long or it takes more. Sometimes the recording slots, I've got 3 in a week. Sometimes I have none. I would say on a per episode basis, it's anywhere between 2 to 3 hours. But again, some of that's reading time in the evenings or the mornings or the weekends. The recording is over only, I book an hour. And typically once we get past the half hour to 40 something minute mark and I feel good about it, I let the conversation naturally flow. But if we hit the top of the hour, I kind of wrap up. So it's going to be different for everybody.
Right.
And as you get better at it, you'll find where you can push the gas pedal a little bit and or where you can delegate and accommodate other people helping you.
So one of the things that I wanted to ask you, I'm assuming that the hours you spend like research depends on like if you had that guest on before, because you have some repeat guests, and also, You know, if it's like a big name, like all of a sudden you're getting the guy who does Getting Things Done, which I know you've interviewed before, but like the first time, you probably prepared a lot when you get a big name like that.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to waste time. And I'm sure that kind of fluctuates, you know, depending on who the guest is.
Yeah. So David Allen, Getting Things Done. So there's a couple different points I want to make here on this one. David Allen, Getting Things Done was the first guest other than Michael Hyatt. I knew I could get Michael Hyatt. I didn't know if I could get David Allen. And I said, I'm going to step up to the plate and I'm going to ask. Mm-hmm. And the worst I'll get is a no, but I think eventually I'll get a yes. Well, I got a yes within 24 hours from his wife saying he'd love to do it. And it shocked me. And that was a really good lesson to have. So that was the first time. He was one of the first 16. I immediately, like you said, went into over-prepare mode because I just didn't want to seem foolish or stupid or didn't, you know what I was doing. That first recording went great. We hit it off right away. We hit all the right notes. He was great. I felt confident. After it was over, it worked out really well. But the next key piece was he's been back now. I don't even know how many times I can count, but he's been back asking to be back. Now, I asked the second time, but I think the third and fourth time, his company reached out because the track record was there. Mm. And they had a new book out, Getting Things Done for Teens and the Getting Things Done workbook. And so that touches on a couple of different things. One, make the ask. The worst you're going to get is a no, and you may get a yes eventually. Start asking, keep asking. Number two is one of the things I did to prepare for the second one, I listened back to the first one. Mm. And so I did my own trick on myself and listened back and said, oh, you know what? When he asked, he gave that answer. I wish I had asked this also as a follow-up. And so I started to formulate follow-up questions and kind of do a revisited version of that first one in the second one. And then the third and fourth, it was different because I just needed to go over the book. And those were easy books because I already had the foundation already built. Yeah. So repeat guests, especially good ones where you've either heard from your audience that they loved them, or you just really enjoy them. Screw the audience. Do it for yourself once in a while.
Right.
That's a gold mine.
Mm. So we have started doing that actually in our actual notes when we prepare. And Grace does an amazing job with this. We've done it enough. We kind of know what will be said or what kind of, you know, their response will be. And we have follow-up questions, right, already prepared for that. So having those ready, one, it saves you a lot of time. A lot of times our audience will ask that and we can pull in those in it. Even though we were going to ask it anyway, we bring our audiences in instead and gives a little bit more interactivity. So having those follow-up questions, I think, is key.
That's another piece is that if you have, and this, I'll tease this, one of the things that I would have done differently is I would have intentionally built a community around the show earlier and still need to do more with that. But your audience can really help you get questions that you might not even think of to ask your upcoming guests. And throwing that out there to them can be a real bonus. Still searching for a great candidate for your company? Don't search, just match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch that busy work. Instead, use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. I wish I had Indeed when I was in the hiring process in roles in the past because it is a slow, arduous headache of a process to find the right people. Or, at least it used to be, join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to find and hire great talent fast. In fact, in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Don't you hate getting cornered by family members that feel like you have to hold back some of the story from them? You know, the one that asks when you're getting married or what's going on with that promotion or why haven't you moved out of mom and dad's basement? Then they're not really listening. They're just judging. While you may have to grin and bear it with your family, you shouldn't have to feel that way when it comes to talking to your doctor about that maybe you ate pizza one too many times that week or something else. Enter ZocDoc.
the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable and actually listen to you. And we're not talking about a few. We're talking about tens of thousands of doctors, all with verified patient reviews so that you can make sure that the vibes are vibing before you ever meet in real life. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and a website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. And you can specifically filter for those that take your insurance or are located near you or treat a condition that you're searching for. My doctor recently retired, so I'm using ZocDoc right now to find the best fit for me. And you can too. Go to ZocDoc.com/beyond and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/beyond. ZocDoc.com/beyond.
So kind of more kind of brass tacks, I guess, is like, how do you mentioned scheduling. How do you set up scheduling? Do you use like Calendly or something like that to schedule people that they can pick their time? And do you have like certain times of day that you already, like you mentioned time blocking, like do you have those blocks set and then they can pick from them? Or you say, hey, I'm doing it on this date. I need you here then. I mean, how strict are you with time?
So again, it's going to be dictated by what your availability is. And that's why I like to change it up and go seasonally. I personally love not recording hardly at all throughout the summer when there's a high chance that something random where everybody's home during a recording, that's, you know, that's nerve wracking sometimes, or at least it used to be. I've gotten better at it, but, or if you're recording during the workday, which is most of the time when people are doing it, like you've got to say, okay, that's my lunch hour and, you know, start earlier on your work stuff and then take that hour and then eat something right after or before. After is better. Don't do it before. You never know what's going to happen.
That's right.
But to have those places in mind. And so, for example, right now I'm done recording. I'm not done recording. I'm done booking, I should say, for the remainder of 2022. As we're recording this in October, I have a few left and I've got a bunch banked and I'm going to get through to the end of the year and even into January. And then I'm looking now at formulating what does January, February, March look like in terms of family obligation, workload, and creating margin and not overwhelm and overload for myself personally. Again, I mentioned recording three in a week, but I prefer not to. But sometimes in order to get like that runway, you have to, or at least do more than one in a week. And there are people who, I mean, again, we mentioned other people earlier that batch record. They'll have a dedicated day and they'll record one in the morning, one late morning, one in the early afternoon, and one late afternoon, and then they've done for the month. That's a viable option, not for me personally, but I think that's an option for some people. And so, again, it's all about knowing what that structure is and what that structure's adaptability and flexibility is going to be in each of those, you know, seasons. If you're going to go month to month, or if you're going to go, or if you're going to record seasons and you just say, I'm going to record one season, season one, season two, season three, how many episodes that is. I can see a season being 10 episodes and you have 2 weeks off in a quarter, something like that. But it's variable and it's got to fit you and what works for you schedule wise, workload wise, so that you avoid burnout.
So do you have any special like scheduling tools that you really like to use that you have found as a productivity expert too really works really well for podcasters?
Well, I stick with Calendly. That's what I'm using now. That's what I've actually, it's really what I've mostly used because I can maintain kind of a structure in there of what's available. Plus it's got all the, you know, bells and whistles of sending reminders or that first email with the link to where the recording's going to be and all that kind of good stuff where it's automated and it's not me then manually. They said, yes. Okay. What time works for you? When can you do it? I have these times available. No. You, as the host, set it up as to when you're available and you monitor that like I do for a quarter, right, for 12 weeks. And then you can go in and you can remove times and things like that. And then you just shoot them the link and then they can click on it and pick for themselves what works. And I try to have, you know, a couple different options. It only runs into an issue when somebody say like in Australia and we've got to figure out how to make that work. But I can accommodate that once they tell me.
Right. So what do you record with? Because there's tons of different options. You know, we mentioned the Rodecaster, which is a hardware device that you can record on. But for like doing interviews, you know, most people don't really do phone call in anymore. They use a tool. What tools do you like to use for your show?
Yeah, man, I think I've only ever had phone call fed in maybe twice ever. Right. Right. And it was the technical difficulty thing, or it was a misunderstanding on their part where they were like, I was just calling into your Skype. Used to use Skype. Remember Skype?
Ugh.
I'm so glad that that's basically dead, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh, I hated Skype, but I used it for a long time. And what I was using for Skype was Ecamm's Skype recorder. So I've been using Ecamm products for years before everybody else, or at least along with a lot of other people. But I wanted to move away from that. And obviously the first thing I did was you switch over to Zoom. And that was actually pre-pandemic. But then what was great in a lot of ways about that season, and we're still in it, but was suddenly people were like, oh, Zoom, what kind of became the Kleenex. It was the brand name that everybody got used to, right?
Yes.
So, but again, Zoom compresses audio, doesn't give you the greatest quality. And so you want to go to something like a Squadcast or a Riverside or a Zencaster, or there's a bunch of different ones out mm-hmm. there. I have fully moved away from Zoom as a recorder. Again, I'm using your sponsor and our friends over at Ecamm. I am using Ecamm now as my full rig because I can get separate audio tracks. It's quick. It's easy. It's already set up all the time. And I've now moved to using the Rodecaster as a backup option. But again, what's great about it is I can get from Ecamm the raw audio on their side and mine instead of just what gets fed into Rodecaster through the mix minus scenario.
And one of the things we're not going to talk about this, but I want to mention it, is that a lot of discovery now is happening over on YouTube, video podcasts. We went to Podcast Movement last month, and the biggest thing people were talking about was video podcasting. And Ecamm does a great job with that because not only do you get the audio tracks separated, but you also get the video that you can use and upload to YouTube. In fact, when I'm done with this, I hit end and it gives me an option to upload it right to YouTube as soon as I'm over. So big shout out to our sponsor, Ecamm, socialmedianewslive.com/Ecamm. Once again, they have their Leap into Podcasting replays that are available. You can get those by downloading and buying the guide over at merch.ecamm.com. Ecamm is spelled ECAMM. .com. If you guys are listening on the podcast, merch.ecamm.com. And if you get those guides, you get access to not only the video podcasting kind of Leap virtual conference, but to, I think, 2 or 3 years of their Leap into live streaming, which is really, really good. A lot of great speakers. Eric and I and Grace both spoke there. A lot of our friends who are in this space did training over there as well. So it is definitely worth checking out. So make sure you guys go do that. So let's go into, okay, we've recorded a show, we've got our tools, we've done all that, we've scheduled everything, we're really productive. What do we do after we're done? Do you have any, like, I've been on podcastings where they send me this thing, like, you were required to share this show, and like, you know, I didn't know there was a contract involved kind of a thing. So, I mean, I've actually had to sign releases before. Like, people wanted me to sign, like, a release that it's okay if they reuse my voice for stuff. So, do you go that hardcore? What do you do when a show is done? Do you send your guests stuff and ask them to share? What are your thoughts?
I treat it like a relationship instead of a business transaction.
Right.
And I say, thank you. That was great. Some people at that point in time, when they've got somebody still on the line, is when they will ask, hey, I hope you had a great time. Do you know anybody else you think would be a good fit for this show? Now, my thing is I don't do that because I don't think they've gotten a full enough eye on what being a fit for the show means at that point from their limited view. They would have to have listened to multiple episodes to really get that. So I don't do that. For some, it may make sense, and I don't fault them for that at all. But I, right then and there, say, thank you. This was great. I kind of give them an estimate about when it's going to come out because, again, batch processing, batch recording. But I say, I've got your email, or I've got the email of whoever connected us. And sometimes they'll give me theirs right then and there, and I'll gladly accept it because if it turned out great, great. I've got a direct line to them to do another episode. And so that's good. I've got emails for a lot of great people that I'm going to have back. But key is I make sure that it's friendly and that we end it on a great note. I thank them. I say, this is when it's going to come out as an estimate. And I say, I will let you know and confirm that as kind of an extra touch point. So that's 1, 2, 3, you know, it's, we got connected, we recorded, it went great. Thank you. I'll let you know. Mm-hmm. Then I email them and let them know when it will be. Then I email them, let them know it's live or when it will be live. And I give them the link and I say, if you want to take a listen or if you want to share, it turned out great. Thank you so much. And that's when I also will in that email say, I would be glad to have you back. Let me know when you have your next thing that you're working on done, and we can touch on that. Or sometimes even in that post call chat, mm-hmm. I'll say, oh my gosh, I got to have you back because we didn't get to finish. And there's these three other things. Right. So we'll book that. So that's, I play it like a relationship because it is.
Right,
let's be honest. It is, or it should be.
So productivity wise, do you have that as a template that you've already got an email set up? I know you do Text Expander. Do you have like that email set up that you just drop in their names, or do you try to craft a new one for each guest?
I basically have Text Expander set up to hit the basic notes of what that interaction is going to be. And then if there's a new, a nuance to it, I add that flourish in and just I hit send. I don't think about it too hard, because when you think about it too hard or you overthink it is when you stall out and then you don't send it or don't send it in time.
So you mentioned, you know, that I thought that was really key, and I hope people picked up on that. Like, if you didn't get the things done, you didn't get through all your questions, or it was really great and you wanted to have them back, it's immediately booking that for another show. And we do that too. Like we did it with Janet Murray. If you guys remember a couple weeks back, she had she was doing a launch and she was going to give the results of the launch in a couple of weeks. So we booked that right then when she said that, like, it's okay, we want to get that because that'll be interesting data to talk about. I think that's really key. So you've had multiple guests on. So I want to know what makes a good repeat guest. How do you make that list? And two, what makes it so you'll never be asked back on Eric Fisher's Beyond the To-Do List podcast?
That's a great question. Let's see. So to be a repeat guest, it's going to have to go well, first off. And two, you're going to have to keep creating stuff or have a great perspective on things, basically, and it's going to have to fit the show. And one of the things that I do is occasionally, again, once a year, I kind of look back at the past year and I say, or even at the 6 month mark, who has been great in the last chunk of time that I need to have back? They haven't had a new book come out, because truthfully, it's usually repeat business. It's usually somebody like a Todd Henry who has, there's going to be a year and a half cycle, year and a half to 2 years, where he's going to come out with a new book. And either I'm going to be aware of the book because I'm following him on multiple channels and I will ask him myself, or his PR team or whatever will ask me. Sometimes both happens at the same time. Right. I'm like, I just sent him an email asking him if he'd be on the show. Oh, great. Then our job is done as PR team. We win. So I will look back through and I will keep that list. And I have a running list of, Todd's on the list, David Allen's on the list. There's a number of people where it's like, if at any point in time they ask, it's a no-brainer that it's a yes, or it's, hey, let's check in with them. Let's check in with that person. Laura Vanderkam's another one. She's about to come back on the show. She's been on the show, gosh, 6 times, maybe something like that. As far as never getting asked back, man, you're lucky if the show goes out. Number one, if it's that bad. There's been a very, very, very small handful of those. Very small. Sometimes it goes out and then it's out there for a while. And then I'm like, okay, yeah, one, that's not a good episode. And or two, and again, you've got to be careful with that, because, some people, it's like, hey, my episode's not on your feed anymore. Well, if you're really that nitpicky that you're looking at my feed to see if it's still there, you have other issues to think about here, not just my show. Right. But that said, yeah, one, it's going to have to have gone well enough to at least been put out there. But number two, again, remember the rule I said earlier about you want the guest to talk about 75-80% of the episode and not just the host talking. Well, if it's like 99% of the episode, that's a little bit hard to deal with as a host, because if you can't get a question in,
right,
or you can't interject your thought or pivot point or whatever, and they lead the conversation instead of you, that's probably not a good thing. It's probably, their agenda only versus a mutual beneficial exchange and or conversation. I'm trying to think of what else would get you to never come back. Well, I don't know.
I know sometimes it's like, sometimes they would be great titans of the industry and you get them on, and then sometimes they go off the rails and they become almost untouchable. And that's when you would remove them from your show, or, they have gone in a way that doesn't align with what your show or beliefs are about. And that's another way. So, I mean, I've known you long enough, only a couple that I've noticed that happened.
There's another reason, now that you're saying that, there's another reason is if it goes out there and it's out there, and then, and even if it goes well, and then they ask to come back, but what they're asking to come back and talk about is basically a retread, and it's, there's no new information there. Like, I've got to think long and hard. Well, that last one went okay. I suppose I could do a part two, but there's no way a part three could happen. And even the part two is going to be like a shorter episode. It's got to be worth it. It can't just be a retread, because if it's literally just me putting out the same exact episode, I already got that one recorded. It's got to be worth my time.
Right.
What's something that works so well, it basically feels like magic? For me, I'm thinking air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, definitely. Meeting-free Fridays. What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your own shop stage to the first real store stage, you don't have to just sell your own stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from brands you love and give your customers more variety and your business more sales. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify also helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyond. Again, go to shopify.com/beyond now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/beyond.
That's a great point. So I want to talk about, you know, you've kind of got it streamlined. You've got it kind of in your productivity mindset. You've got the tools done. You've got it scheduled. You know that it amazes me how far out you're booked. It just makes me so jealous. But you recently hired an editor to even help with this, because I knew you for 9 years you've been editing your own podcast.
Yeah.
So talk about that, why you did it, and how that goes into your podcasting productivity and workflow. Because I think that made you more productive right off the bat.
Oh, it did. And it was a long time coming. I waited way too long, should have done it way sooner, but there was a couple of different variables. So number one, I really accepted that I needed somebody else to do it to free up my time. And in order to do that, I needed to be able to trust that person to do it well. And so this friend of mine who that's a lot of the trust came along from the person that's editing it. It's a friend from college. Mm-hmm. And we've known each other over 20, near 25 years now. And so he's been editing it now for a little over a year. And I'm so thankful that he's doing it. And even then it was I've got to show him what I kind of look for, or what my nuance is,
right?
You know, what's my way of doing it. No one is ever going to 100% mimic your way. You have to get over that. But if you can get somebody to that 80-90%, John Acuff talks about, where if mm-hmm. you can get that 80-90% and released out to the world, good, we're good. So we worked through that, and he had enough training editing another show that I helped kickstart, and he now edits, and it's another friend of ours. He had been doing that for a good year and a half or so, where I was kind of help editing there, and he would edit, and we'd go back and forth, and then he took it all over and maintained all the revenue. Once he'd had that training for a while and I knew he could handle it, and we worked through my specific nuances for my show, the trust was there. So I gave it over to him over a year ago. And the other key piece was I needed to be able to compensate him fairly for his time for doing it. And so we got to that point as well. And it just worked out. It made sense. It just made sense for me to let it go. And from that point forward, my stress level on my show dropped dramatically.
Mm. Well, not having your show stress you out is a way that you can increase your productivity and longevity doing a podcast. One of the things, and I know a lot of people want to monetize their podcast. That's a whole nother show that we could talk about. But I know that you do that. You have ads that run during your show. And I want to ask, and talk about the productivity behind that. How does these advertising spots contribute to your workflow? I mean, do you batch do your ad reads? I mean, I think most of yours are host reads in that way. You have dynamic ads, I know, that go into yours as well. But talk about that. Do you sit down and okay, do you know for one thing, do you get you're going to do this month, I've got to batch all these ad reads out? How does that play into your workflow?
So again, this is a variable thing. It's going to have to require some flexibility because I work with an agency. I'll just shout them out here, True Native Media, and they've done well by me, and each year has been more profitable than the last. Mm-hmm. Check them out if you don't have any kind of person helping you with that. They are great. That said, they book something, and it depends on the length of the campaign, whether it's going to be every episode or if it's going to be one a month for a whole year or twice a month for the whole year or once a month for a quarter. It just depends. And it depends on when they have new ad copy I need to rotate in and do a new read. But again, by taking the editing off of my plate, that made me so much more flexible to not feel pressure as to, I get an email, hey, we've got a new ad copy for this campaign. Can you switch it out before 2 weeks from now when that next one runs? Sure thing. No problem. Because again, I just need to run through it a little bit, kind of put it in my, you know, my voice, get it ironed out. And, you know, it's 5-10 minutes of work and it's well worth it.
Because a lot of us don't run ads like we don't do them on our right. show other than our sponsor. And I was like, okay, man, I could see that add up. Like if you start doing ads and you have to do it some, you know, different times. And I'm like, well, that could really add up. So what type of promotion do you do for your show? Because, you know, you've been around for 10 years, so you've got some of the, you know, the old school podcasting juice, like, oh, Eric Fisher. Yeah, he was back when, you know, it was on my Zune device. But, you know, the Dell Zune, remember those? Yeah. But
what it's Microsoft. Come on, man.
Yeah. Oh, it was. It was
Star Microsoft. Lord uses it.
That's right.
You gotta lock it in your head.
Okay, anyway. I don't know why Dell. Anyway. I had so many Dell PCs.
Yours was like the Diamond Rio
Anyway, back in the day when it took a lot, like you had to, you know, do a lot of things to load it on your computer, from your computer on your device. The thing is, what do you do to promote your show, especially now, because it's harder than ever before. I mean, podcasting has taken off. Every year is the year of podcasting, and it's harder to get discovered. So how do you promote your show, and what advice would you give somebody who's just starting out?
I always say this, and I still say this even to myself. I'm looking at the man in the mirror. I don't do enough promotion. Nobody does. Actually, that's not true. Some do more than they should, but that's okay. I kind of try to take lessons from them. You do a great job, by the way. That's a lesson that everybody could take a look at from Jeff and Social Media News Live, is look at the clips, look at the things that they chop up, look at the, you know, the different snippets and things like that. And you know, but again, I think the strongest thing you can do is if you have guests, pick the right guests. Mm. And hopefully, you know, their name recognition of you saying, I had a great conversation with so-and-so on such and such, carries enough weight to at least get somebody interested if they've never checked it out. Number two, kind of working it into maybe, you know, if maybe you have a weekly newsletter and people follow you for other stuff, let them know what that episode, the most recent one, is about. Slip that in there. Say, hey, if you're interested, we dive deeper into this topic of this newsletter on this episode with so-and-so. It doesn't have to be the latest one. Could be one that's been out for a little while. There's a lot of different options and ways. And, you know, a lot of people are like, TikTok. TikTok's the thing for podcast. I'm like, TikTok's a thing I'd have to really wrap my head around and think about. I mean, again, one of the best things is people, I do this. If I'm a guest on a show and I thought it went well, even if it went okay-ish, I still will share it because I feel like I'm confident enough that at least I did my part. I don't know about the host, but I'm not trying to tear anybody down. But still, I typically, if somebody says, hey, your show's out, I'll go to the page where the show is. I'll click share and I'll say, I had a great time talking with so-and-so on this. And it was great. Thanks for having me. And I'll share it out where it's appropriate, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, etc. And I don't force anybody to do that with my show, but I make sure they have the availability of doing that. And I don't craft, like, you know, unique graphics and all that kind of good stuff and say, because if me personally, you don't have to listen to me, but me personally, I don't feel like, because again, Jeff does this and it's good, but I don't think you give the person, you know, the thumbnail for mm-hmm. the video. Some people do. They're like, we've created graphics for you to share right. your show.
Right.
You know, that's so much, that's like giving somebody a gift and then asking them to wear it right then as they unwrap it.
I don't do
it,
that.
Right?
I don't
it's
do
awkward.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't do that yet.
No, we're not doing that. What we do is we do the clips. We take things and clip it up. And then I ask, yes. I offer, and I don't just give it to them. I say, if you want the entire transcript or the video file, just let me know and I can send it to you. And I do that after the camera goes off and we're still talking in kind of the green room. But the clips thing does really well. So, cause I app mention them and it goes into a queue and it constantly is rotated with Agora Pulse. So, and people like that. Nobody has ever said, oh, don't do that. They like seeing themselves in the feed and they like it when it gets shared and it makes them look smart and it makes you give them the thing. So on that note with the promotion and all this stuff, and you said you really would wish you'd do some more. Kind of the final couple questions is, if you go back in time and talk to yourself when you first started podcasting, what is some advice that you'd give yourself? Like, what would you say? Hey, I learned this. If you did this now, it would really, you would kill it.
Yeah. Well, again, as soon as I could have afforded anybody to edit the show other than me, that would have been the first thing. Mm. Number one. Number two would have been get into that batch process mindset and don't feel like you've got to record something every single week in order to put something out every single week. And in fact, I would even say revisit the idea of coming up with something to put out every single week. Now, it's helped me. There's, you know, this huge back catalog. But at the same time, if I had curated and been a little more intentional from the get-go and said, I'm going to do 10 episodes a quarter and have 2 weeks where there's nothing, or even two seasons a year and either drop them all at once or, you know, and maybe play with it thematically. Hey, this season, this is what we're doing. That's where some of those questions, like, hey, here's the question you're asking everybody. It makes sense in a season. And then it's a new question next season. See, the way you think about that, the way you process that, it can really make a huge difference. And, you know, we don't forget, like, Jeff, you and I have our favorite shows and we love when they're coming back. Picard, February 2023. And we know when it's coming. We're anxiously awaiting it, and creating some of that FOMO for your show is not a bad thing. The back episodes are there. You can re-promote them. You can package them up differently. You can chop them up. Like, just think outside the box. That's what I would have told myself then. And just treat it with a higher quality, but also with a little less of a preciousness, you know,
right.
And not be so particular, learn quicker and faster than I did. And I don't know that that's something anybody's going to ever hear. You know, if I could go back in time and tell myself, they'd be like, psh, whatever, old man. But still, I hope somebody else can hear it from me now.
Right. So, you know, I think that there's that quote, and I put it on my slides when I present, and it's from John Acuff, and you use it too. It's like, what, 80% perfect and shared with the world always changes more lives than 100% perfect and stuck in your head. That's exactly right. Yeah. And I just think that is the thing that we all should hear, especially even when we're trying new things or if you're starting a podcast. So yeah, that's great advice. The last question, Eric, is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have that would be perfect for this podcast productivity episode that my audience would needs to know? Like something like, oh, Jeff, you should have asked this question that I didn't.
I would say maybe how do you get started? Like if you don't feel like you've got a topic, or yeah, you don't feel like you have the confidence to talk to other people or the confidence to do a solo show, I would say practice in public, but with limited release, like record it live to a Facebook group like you and I used to test stuff out in,
right,
and have a trusted group of advisors, friends, whatever, mastermind group, who knows, and go live there. Or record something, upload it there, beta test it, get feedback, iterate that way, but don't wait. Work on it and let your brain work on it in a slow cooker kind of way, because that's where the real good stuff's going to come from. I wanted to do my show. I worked on my show for 6 months before I even ever started, but at least I didn't wait longer than that.
That is a great point. That is a great point. There's so many things that I wish I would have done different. But once again, the last question that we all podcasters, all live show people usually do when they have an interview show, where can people find about all things Eric J. Fisher?
So start with beyondthetodolist.com. That's where you can find the show. And there's so many there. And if you want to ask, do you have an episode on this topic? Hit me up on Twitter. At twitter.com/Eric with a K, the letter J, F-I-S-H-E-R, or type in E-R-I-K-F-I-S-H-E-R on LinkedIn, or Eric J. Fisher at Instagram, any of those. You can hit me up, ask me questions. I will point you to an episode that I'm sure is going to help you. There's so many out there and so many more coming.
Eric, thank you so much for your friendship and for coming on the show today. Thank all of you for watching. Appreciate you guys, and we will see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Well, that's another podcast episode crossed off your listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed my sharing of this episode of Jeff's podcast, Social Media News Live. I have linked that up in the show notes so that you can follow along and maybe watch a show live sometime. I occasionally co-host or am a guest there. And he's got a ton of great back catalog episodes that are on not just Facebook, but YouTube that you can watch, but you can also listen if you're an audio only person. Totally get it. Check out what Jeff's doing over there. He's doing great work. He's been doing it for a few years now. He's got lots of great evergreen content for you over there in terms of marketing and social media, online presence, all of that good stuff. If that's right up your alley, that's exactly what you want to do. I've linked it up in the show notes. Go check it out. And again, if you are a podcaster and appreciated this, share it with some other podcasters that you know need to hear it. Or if you're thinking about starting a podcast or know someone who is, would you do me the favor of sharing this episode with somebody, again, that you know needs to hear it? Some podcaster or future podcaster out there will thank you for it. It'll save them a lot of the headaches that both Jeff and I have had in our podcasting process. I really want to make this easier for people to make great podcasts and share with the world. So on that note, I'll just say thank you for sharing. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you next episode. Hey, thanks for listening to the end. If you're looking for a show to start helping you apply these productivity lessons on your business, check out Millionaire University. It's real lessons from real entrepreneurs teaching you what you need to know to improve your business or start one if you've been putting it off. It covers all aspects of business from starting, marketing, growing, managing, and everything in between, wearing all the hats. And as an added bonus, I am conducting a number of those conversations, those interviews. So you'll fit right in. Again, that's Millionaire University. Just search for it in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this podcast.